Hitting the intro, doing this shit.
You are one of us.
Who's
that? Your passion is the world of mountain biking, from enduro to gravel races and everything in between. This is Insider MTB, the podcast that takes you behind the handlebars, into the dirt, and behind the scenes of the mountain biking world. And now your host, Austin White.
I feel like we should just run that whole thing right there with you talking, us going into it. I mean, how much more raw could it get?
I can do it.
You can do it. All right. Yeah, what's up, guys? I'm Austin White. This is episode 12. Spencer over here. I'm stoked he could make it because it was a little bit running and gunning there, but we're the Black Shirt Mafia right now. We're just running it. Ray is in the waiting room. Spencer, we'll just let's hit it real quick. Talk to me. What's been
nothing new with me. You know, we're always last minute Larry's over here, so
we're professionals.
We're just here. We're along for the ride, man. That's about it. But yeah, we're cruising. Yeah, it's another day, another opportunity.
I mean, I feel bad. Look, Ray's been sitting in this waiting room
for a minute.
I'm gonna bring her in. All right, let's go for it. Let me click this green button. Hopefully I know what I'm doing. Tech expert over here. Let's see. Is it? Oh, there we go. It's loading. Loading. And I'm stuck on this one page right here. I think she's, obviously she's in a different country right now, but I think she's over there getting ready for the World Cup. Oh, what's up? Okay, there we go.
Hello. I'm here.
What's up, Ray?
Hey, Ray. How's it going?
Hey, first off, sorry. We're running a little late here. Spencer was running. That's why you sat in the waiting room for a little bit there.
No worries at all.
All right. Our main guest, our only guest for tonight, Ray. Thank you for joining us. First off, sorry for us being a little bit of a shit show right now. I know that you kind of know Spencer. I know we were riding at one moment together at Sea Otter and you guys had interaction. I don't know. Do you guys know each other? Or is it just like, oh, he rides enduro, I know him?
I dealt with Spencer a little bit when he worked for 100%. And then now he does stuff with DVO. So connected with the DVO stuff. But I was in his area before Sea Otter. So I got a little tour guide of his local tracks, and then obviously Sea Otter with you two. So yeah, okay. A little bit short.
It's kind of like the I see him at the races type of guy then. Okay. Or
yeah. Pretty much, which I barely do any of that nowadays. But yeah, when I was working for 100%, I was doing social media stuff for them and yeah, I've known Ray for a little while. Yeah. Welcome on. Welcome to the Insider MTV. I'm sure
Jesse's in the background
wanting to be on the podcast instead of you probably. So
Jesse's the guy who helped me line this one up. I mean, but we were trying. I feel like you're a hard cat to get, you know, like at Sea Otter I was like, what do we got to do to get you on? And you had just such a crazy schedule.
Sea Otter was tough. It's a short week and it goes really, really fast. And I think the only slot that you guys had, I was practicing for, I don't know.
You're just in high demand. High demand.
I don't know about that. But yeah, finally teed it up and stoked to be on here.
No, that's cool. I know at Sea Otter, we were talking, you had like some insane house that you were staying at that Spencer was super jealous of. What was up with that situation there again?
Wow. Yeah, we landed on our feet in Sea Otter. That was such just amazing. One, it was quite a last minute decision to go to Sea Otter. We just decided because it was a good race leading into the World Cup, and it's halfway around the world for us to Europe. So, you know, we can do one long haul flight, stop, race, and then do the next long haul flight to Europe. So like perfect, get to see Liv and DVO, all the sponsors. So yeah. And then one of my sponsors, Five Dev, who do those really sick titanium cranks. But their mountain biking components are their like side passion project. They're kind of real jobs. They've got contracts with like NASA and SpaceX and the US military to make sick like titanium. I don't even know what. Like, I think they made a window on a spaceship for one of the SpaceX, like, spaceships.
So you're going to the moon is what you're saying with this.
Pretty much, yeah. So, but yeah, so I've never met these guys, and they offered ages ago accommodation for us if we went. So we said yes, because obviously that saves quite a bit of money, especially that area, and they're right by the venue, so we're like, perfect. And yeah, first time meeting these guys, and one, they were awesome, but obviously their company's doing quite well with all these contracts, and they just hired or rented this massive mansion. It was huge. I felt like a royal person would be able to live there. Like, I don't even know, like 7 bedrooms. It had like a tennis court, a swimming pool. It had a games room with like a massive, like pretty much movies and like ping pong. And oh my God, it was, yeah, it was insane. And they brought their personal chef. They share a personal chef, the two owners. So they brought their chef to the races. So we didn't, all the food, everything was made for us. It was a different living for me for sure. And I loved every moment of it.
I understand why Spencer was jealous now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I heard, yeah, I mean, you kind of were describing some of it. I didn't know the chef, 7 bedrooms. I mean,
it was insane. Wow. Yeah.
The chef is the best part in my opinion. Yes.
And he was incredible. Food. Absolutely incredible.
No way. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So would recommend, you know.
Yeah.
if you get a chance.
Yeah, 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I think the week before, McLaren stayed there. So yeah, it was a baller house for sure.
Holy moly. Can I travel with you?
I feel crap. It was just a fluke. We kind of managed that, or just said yes and didn't really know.
Oh, so you had no idea. You were like, oh, these guys got a house. And the typical thing is like, yeah, we all stay in one, you know, one thing. And then you show up to this.
It wasn't until the day that we're going to check in and they sent us the address and just like went on Google Maps and we're like, hang on, like zooming in and be like, what? Like, what is this? This is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a good time. I had a great time. Well looked after at Ciotta.
I think I know who we need to sponsor the podcast.
Well, all right, let's take it a step back. Let's allow Ray, if you want, to introduce yourself a little bit. You're Ray Morrison. You're from New Zealand. You're Liv's poster child. You ride for Liv and Camelback and DVO and a couple others, 5Dev. And you're Miss Enduro, right? So you've been racing a long time. You do a bunch. And this year you've kind of come out swinging. You changed some things up from my understanding and have been crushing it, right?
Yeah. Well, it's a good introduction. Thanks.
Yeah, seriously.
I think this – we worked it out. I think this is my 10th year on the circuit. Or at the end of the year, it'll be 10 years. Yeah. So it's been a long time on this World Cup circuit. It's been good. I've been with Liv for 8 years now. So majority of my career is spent with Liv, which has been incredible. And yeah, it's been quite cool. Like when I started with Liv, it was their first, they had just brought out the Enduro bike and needed an Enduro athlete. And the stars aligned and I got signed with them. But I was kind of, Liv paid for me to be on the Giant Factory team. So I was like, I wouldn't say a guest because I was part of a team. But yeah, it was separate, but I was with the Giant Factory team. And that was, again, incredible opportunity. But then through my years, I've seen it develop from, you know, being part of another team. And then they brought on Liv Racing and then they brought on more athletes. And just seen it develop into this, you know, amazing thing it is today. So
is that like when I first met you, remember at Sedona when you wrapped yourself around a cactus?
No, I didn't do that. I was helping someone who did that.
Oh, it wasn't you?
I was the one It was me. Yeah.
Okay.
I was the one with the tweezers helping the poor girl out who had
never seen a cactus before in her life, right?
Oh my God. And she had it everywhere. I think she like rolled around in the cat. It was so bad.
I need to know the whole story here. What's going on?
Well, she was riding a Sedona. I didn't see it, but she crashed and just rolled around in a cactus pretty much.
We were there for the pre-production bikes, testing all the bikes, and you guys were there too. And I don't know, I was shooting some stuff, and obviously there's cactus in Arizona. And this poor girl is never what she it was like her first time ever seeing cactus. Like, she's never seen cactus, and this poor girl.
Yeah, I think she was from Canada. Yeah.
She's never seen cactus. Well, she never wants to see cactus again after that, for sure. Like, I mean, I've seen trophy trucks blow through cactus and get less cactus on them. This poor girl was covered in it. I mean, head to toe. She didn't show up the next day for riding, right? There's no way you could ride after that.
No, because I think like we got, I was there for a wee while, but I was like pulling out. She had it on both hands, up her arm, on her back, kind of on her chair. Oh, it was everywhere.
Were they the jumping choya ones that break off, and now they're those things.
And it was like a dead one too, so it was all like the black ones in her, and it was really bad. And she was like, "What do I do? Like, do I go take a bath?" I'm like, "That's the last thing you do because you're gonna get everything infected." Like it was, it was bad, like hospital bad.
Wow. Oh, the poor, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, that was,
I thought that was girl. You for some reason in my head. I always thought I was like,
I mean, I was there. Present. But yeah, luckily it wasn't me.
Oh, yeah. No, that was, and I feel like they did Sedona a few times. Did you do that a few times? I can't remember.
I only went there for once.
And then we went to like that Jerome Trail. You guys were like shuttling, remember? It was like pretty far away.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a big drive. Yeah.
Yeah. I just remember you guys, they were like, "Hey, we're going to go drive to this place that was, I'm from Arizona and I never even heard of this place." And then you guys made me do that trail, but then you guys only did one lap. And I was just like out there in the wilderness. And I was like, "Are they ever coming back?" And you guys never, and then I think only McKay came back. And I was like, "Where did everyone go?" And he's like, "No, we're done." And I'm like, "What?" Yeah.
I think it was like an hour drive away.
Oh, yeah.
And then, yeah, it was.
The shuttle laps were like an hour or two, right?
They were so, yeah, it was really, it wasn't a quick up the side of a track shuttle. We had to go like out, back on the highway. Yeah, it was.
And you guys were out there shooting giant stuff or giant lift stuff?
I think it was when DVO, they were testing the DVO for OEM and for the team.
I didn't know how much I wanted to say. You know, I was just like, I was there filming, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, we got to give the people a little bit of backstory.
Okay, backstory. I mean, like everyone, I mean, not every team does a team camp, but you guys, Giant and Liv, do it somewhat of a team camp every year, kind of getting people to getting your team together, right? And this is what that was.
Okay, cool. And you were shooting there, Austin, yeah?
Yeah, shooting that and the pre-production bikes before they came out type of thing. Cool. And DVO was testing suspension on the bikes. And
this girl that wrapped herself in a cactus, was she on the Liv team? Or
she wasn't on, she was a staff rider, but she she was testing out the like OEM stuff for the bike. So yeah.
Oh, that makes it even worse, right? You're not like, "Hey, I want to just go and help test some suspension." It wasn't even like, "I'm paid to fully be here and this is my job." Like, oh, wow. Yeah. I feel like we need to get her on the podcast just for 5 minutes to get that info of if she's alive, anything, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. So at Sea Otter, obviously that worked out for you guys. Got the sweet house and you won pretty much everything.
Of Sea Otter.
Yeah.
When you're well fed and well rested, it's like, the stars are the limit.
Oh my gosh. Did you like go back for lunch each day too? Or was you just, eating food at the venue? I mean,
The chef meal prepped center with the.
What?
No. The chef stayed in the mansion the whole time. But yes, he made lunch for us. and then he got it delivered to.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's what led you to the success there? Is this what it is?
Absolutely.
That's what she said.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow. Okay.
Spencer, yeah, food's important.
You might want to take some fucking notes right now, bud.
That's why she's ranked 8th in the world, and I'm not even on the list.
Well, at least she said hi to us when she was climbing up on a transfer stage. Yeah, I feel in royalty right now, you know?
So where the hell are you right now, Ray?
I'm in Slovenia. I know, yeah. I don't know.
For the people that are just listening to the audio of this, she has this amazing painted dragon in the background in the house.
Looming over her head.
Yeah.
I need to know the story behind that because I actually don't know. I just accepted it straight away. Yeah. I need to ask more questions.
I just thought that was your bedroom.
I am.
Wow. We are unlocking some great stuff today.
So you're in Slovenia.
Yes.
I'm in Slovenia. We did an Enduro World Series here like years ago. It's on the border of Austria by Pitzen. But the Live Racing team physio, this is her house.
Okay.
And yeah, I've just come stay for a little bit because she's awesome and the tracks here are awesome. So I've got a long break now as well before I race in September. So, just cruising around Europe.
I'm a little bit confused because at the beginning of the year, I got told that you're retiring, but then it's kind of like this half retiring, or what is it exactly? Can you explain it a little better?
It's a developing scenario.
Okay.
Here.
Okay. Okay.
So, at the end of last year, I was decided that this is my last year. This year, right now, will be my last year. And at the end of that, I'd hopefully move on to like an industry job or like a team job as a staff, but not as a rider. And then coming through this year, like pretty much after Sea Otter and having fun at Sea Otter, I started having like an identity crisis, be like, oh my God, like racing's all I've known and I still love it. And what am I giving up? Like, am I making a right choice? So I've got a really cool maybe opportunity that I'm going towards with the Live Racing XC team. But then I still want to do a bit of racing on the side. So from a full-time racer chasing all the World Cups to a part-time racer, just like cherry-picking the races that I want to do and I'm excited for. So, yeah, there'll still be Ray the Racer, but then hopefully develop into something more post racing as well.
That sounds like an ideal scenario, honestly. I mean, that's racing the things you want to race when you want to race them. And I mean, I don't know. It seems like you've had, correct me if I'm totally wrong here, but a little more success again this year. It seems like you've been enjoying it more and maybe that turns into results because especially the first couple rounds, you really, really kicked ass, right? And maybe you're enjoying it a little more, and that's helping you ride your bike better again. You've changed some things with your program and stuff and flipped what you were training just on its head and changed everything.
Yeah, she's got chefs delivering meals to the races.
There you go. I need to somehow get him to Europe, though.
I love this. Holy shit. But okay, so it was kind of like, hey, I'm retiring. And then it was like, oh shit, like maybe I shouldn't retire. I'm doing pretty good. And what's up? That's kind of the gist.
Pretty much. The reason for retirement, it just felt like a good time. I've been in the sport for a long time. I felt like I've kind of reached my potential with the Enduro World Series. And it's a long commitment. Like I'm normally away from home for 5-6 months of a year. So it's just, you know, it gets a little bit old the more years you do it. That was kind of the direction. But then, I guess it's one of those things that when you have no pressure because it's the last year, you don't care anymore. You're just like, YOLO. And obviously the results come with the less pressure. So I'm like, damn it. It's a really hard balance to to get. But yeah, but like I still love racing, and there's still some races that really excite me. There's a lot of races that don't excite me. So I'm like, well, I'll just won't do those. Yeah. I won't force my way to try and get points for overall, or because that's in my contract, I have to. And I'll just, yeah, pick for ones that I'm really looking forward to or think I can do quite well in.
And so
just want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously. But so like the new little bit of the new / side role, or I'm not sure what to define it as, is basically helping Live the XC women get better at, because I mean the courses are almost mini enduro sections on them. So I mean, what better person than you, right? Like who? But yeah. So it is to help them understand how to ride some of that stuff or get better at it, right? Is that?
Yeah, kind of like. They're all really good riders, so I'm not there teaching them how to ride a bike.
Yeah, no, but,
I'm there. Yeah. You know, it's just another set of eyes. I'm like, they can follow me into sections to get comfortable pretty much immediately from the first lap to be like, so this the is test the race dummy. Line. Chest dummy, yeah. And then, yeah, pretty much lines coach almost. Like conditions change, you know, for line or the main line at the start of a week. When more riders go through it or if it rains, it's not going to be the fastest line at the end of the week.
So you assassinate the wheel and you come back and you're like, 19 PSI be like, guys, is not the answer.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Hey, 19's high for them. Some That's of them are crazy, running like right? 14 PSI.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I don't understand, right?
Yeah.
You would never do that enduro, correct, right?
Oh, no, definitely not. But definitely then, not. Like for the XC, the speed isn't there. And they know the course really well. Like they have pretty gnarly sections, but it's only like max 10 seconds long of that. Whereas I think enduro and, you know, especially downhill, it's a long run and you're going as fast as you can. Whereas XC, you want to get through it as smoothly as can, keep the air in your tires.
Yeah. Have you been running 14 when you're riding with them, or what are you like?
No, I'm not. I don't think I'm qualified to run 14.
You were just
go, yeah.
Yeah. So you were just assassinating wheels right at the beginning, and then you went right back to your regular pressure, is what you're saying.
No. I haven't broken a wheel in years. But yeah, I did go down from like they need the climbs, the climbing there that can be so loose or slippery. So for running lower pressure to get those grip on the climb and run really fast rolling tires. So it kind of, you know,
it sounds a double-edged sword is what you're telling me right here.
No. So they want the fast rolling tires so they don't have much resistance, but then they want the low pressure so they can still get the grip up the climb.
You're like, what? This seems backwards. Why wouldn't you just run a good tire, you know?
Well, yeah, but they've done all the testing, so yeah, this is,
just believe that.
A pro tip for sure.
Okay, so then what do you run in the front chain ring? Like what size sprocket? Do you know?
On the XC bike, 32. Yeah. On my enduro bike, normally a 30.
All right, Spencer, there you go.
Yeah,
we had a big discussion on our last one about because some of those top men were running 40s.
Damn, yeah, that's I can understand it in the short track.
Yeah.
Or in the flatter courses, but those climbs are still like they're really, really steep, and you're doing multiple laps of them.
Yeah.
I
think now you're getting a taste of it, you know.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is when I'm on the XC circuit, everyone rides really, really slowly up the climbs because they're like sessioning and testing all the downhill, all the like features. But like when they're checking the course. The very slow pace and I can keep up, so it's perfect for me. So yeah, I can just spin along in my 32 and be fine.
Okay, that's hot tip for anyone who's training for UCI World Cups right now.
Yeah.
Right.
So basically you're coming in you're gonna come in as a riding coach in some ways that's just gonna be a little bit of a relief system for the Live ambassadors. That's kind of
yeah. I don't want to jinx it because it hasn't I haven't got a contract or anything. I haven't like written it, that this is the direction we're going in, and it's sounding really promising.
Cool.
And that's what I am going for. But yeah, it's pretty much in, you know, in the race week, I'm just there as an extra set of hands of, you know, if the mechanics need wheels to be dropped off at the tent or, you know, just an extra person to be around. And then on course, again, I'm riding the course before the riders, working out what's fastest line, what's the smoothest line. And then I go with the riders, ride with them, show them the lines. I can also follow the riders with my GoPro. So then they have a visual that they can review afterwards. And then I'm there as well. Like, they'll normally do one or two laps and then they're done. So I can stay out there either on bike or on foot and just station myself in a section and just see if anyone's doing anything magical that we can steal.
It's gotten that competitive now then.
Yeah, it's really. And like every team has a technical coach for all the main teams.
So it's
pretty cool. And then maybe in the off season, I can help help suggest areas where the riders can work on technically. But yeah, at like the LIV Racing team, all of them are very quite technically strong for the cross country riders. So cool. They don't need too much input for me telling him how to ride a bike.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I know Annika Beerton is doing something similar for the US.
She was at Paris, wasn't she, for one of the test events. Yeah, that's cool. It's a fun job, awesome. And it's so different from all the enduro stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I can still ride my bike heaps, still do all the geeky analyzing stuff and picking lines, which I love. But there's zero pressure on myself. So it's...
And you can still race Josh Carlson, like in the industry class, you know, like get a little battle going.
I did an industry race in Nova Mesto. It was at 9 o'clock at night. And I didn't even hear about it. It was Liv that were like, can you do this race? And I was like, sure. And then it got real serious. It was pretty much on the short track course with a little bit extra of like urban stuff. And I just thought it was just going to be like random, you know, mechanics, managers. But it was, the spectators were everywhere. All the spectators were drunk. We had like the, you know, the screen with all our names coming down. We had a
commentator. Like you got number plates and everything?
We got number plates. There's a beer tent where people could stop and have refreshments mid-lap. Yeah, it was so way bigger than I thought. And there's so many people. This is not what I expected.
Is that happening at every round?
Like what's or just?
It's just been in Nova Mesto.
Something the UCI is actually doing right, man.
I'm liking this class.
I would recommend it. It was so much fun. And there were so many people.
What place?
First woman. I have no idea overall. Okay. I think top 10 overall.
All right. Yeah. All right. I like this. I mean, I feel like by 9 o'clock, I've had at least two or three beers. It probably wouldn't be any good position for me. So
you wouldn't.
Yeah, I know.
You wouldn't sober, but that's okay.
hey, gosh, Mr. 32 is just mad that I run a 34.
Just
so
being honest,
it's okay. Yeah, we all can't be as good as you, Spencer.
It's ready.
Hey, it's not all about the chain ring size. Yeah.
apparently.
Yeah.
All right. So go ahead.
Who's running a 40?
Keegan Swenson. Chris Blevins has been. They go back and forth between a 40 and a 38.
And then what's his name, right? On the Paris team? I always forget his name. He won one round,
Riley.
And then his chain dropped. Not on Team USA, but on Bjorn, I can always fuck his name up.
Bjorn Riley.
Another
American kid.
Mm. All right, yeah, so,
They run big chain rings.
Wow.
Yeah, and they we were talking about this in our last pod with Keegan
Olympics
Swenson
and stuff
and Tobin McTubbin. McTubbin, and we're talking about a race called the Downeyville Classic, which you should definitely do.
I've heard of that for sure.
Next year on a race that you can just have fun at, and it starts off with a 3,000-foot climb, basically right off the gun, and running a 40 would be nearly impossible for me. So that's what they were on, and it's
wow,
it's incredible. Yeah. But
is there any races that you're now, I guess, not have some freedom that you're going to probably do that you've never done, you know, like a Downeyville type of thing?
Yeah, potentially. I haven't.
Mega Avalanche?
I've done Mega twice. I would go back, but it takes about 4 years to get over what happened and to be like, oh, yeah, that was fun. I'll do that again.
Really? I was supposed to do it this year, but I didn't.
Oh, man. It's. Definitely do it. It's yeah, it should
really?
Be a bucket
list. It looks scary
event.
As shit at the
it's
beginning.
So it's the most scared I've ever been on my bike. You're literally fighting for your life. Yeah.
You are literally like, and there's yeah. no, did you yeah. have a crash or something? Is that why you're saying the 4 years you need to not think about it again? Or
yeah, it's
okay. Okay.
Both oh, the first year I didn't crash. But I never ride in the snow. The only time I ever ride in the snow has been Mega Avalanche.
But isn't it more kind of like ice though-ish? Or is it actual snow and like you're in it?
It doesn't. I mean, you're sliding.
Yes.
It's hard.
You're sliding.
You're sliding. Yeah. Yeah, it's quite hard pat. The last time it was quite a warm summer. So a lot of it was kind of melting and it was a bit more slushy snow. In parts just before the rocks, you know, so
oh,
you're
yeah,
out of control leading into yeah, perfect. But it's just you know,
so
you
first
never
year went
snow.
Good though for you. It went good.
I mean, both
crash.
Years were
okay.
Yeah, I didn't. I survived,
you survived.
I got on a podium both years.
That's good. What do you mean? You were kind of like. Dancing around that, you did good.
Yeah, it's just scary. It's just a really scary event. Once, but the snow section only lasts like 2-3 minutes, and then all the rest is quite fun, like bike park trails, a bit of single track.
Yeah, but that 2 or 3 minutes probably feels like 10 minutes because you're just
exactly
pounding
yeah
in your chest.
Yeah, and it's what you're like terrified for the whole week. It's just like, oh my god, mass start on the snow. I don't even know. I still don't know how to ride it because when you break. You lose traction, and then turning, it just takes, you can't like lean it in. You have to be so gentle because you're like kind of sliding. So you almost need to like carve real gently, but I just no brakes the first bit and just hope I'll make fifth corner at the bottom. And it's so scary. I think I got 80 kilometers an hour last
what?
Time.
What
I
is
was
that?
There.
So mile per hour. What is
oh.
Like 50.
40? 50?
Yeah, 48, isn't it like something like that. 40? It's
really?
Yeah, 100.
On the ice.
100 Ks.
Snowish.
62 miles an hour.
Yeah, oh, it's so scary. So scary.
All right, so I have to ask something like for both of you, then you was there prep? Like, did you go ride some ice, snow, or you just showed up at this sucker and just went? Like, what do you?
Yeah, you get a practice day. You get one practice session on this on the top of the glacier, but the problem is they don't like groom the trail, so you're riding it and it's like it's almost unrideable because it's slushy and it's really terrible. So it puts you off. You're like, I can't ride this. In practice, I couldn't ride anything. I like crashed within the first few meters and slid all the way to the bottom.
Wait, that was your practice run?
That was my practice run. And then,
I don't know if I would
have
showed up for race. I would have been like, no, I'm out. Like, this is fucking nuts.
The worst thing is it's so, because you have to go early in the morning. So it can be like, you know, hard pack as they can make it, the snow. But it's at 6 a.m. So it's freezing up there. You're cold. You wait around for ages. And then they're just like, good luck, everyone. And yeah, just release you down the most gnarly. I mean, it's like a black run skiing. And yeah, you're there with a lot of people side by side, just trying to get down the ice.
Figure it out.
You figure it out. I don't know how it's still running, to be fair. I don't know how this event
die?
Is still.
Like, what?
Yeah, I don't even know. The helicopter's just going backwards and forwards.
But at least what I see, I mean, how many can fit? And then you're like, if you're fucking 10 rows back, you're dead. You might as well just not even take off. You just kind of wait, right?
Yeah, that's, pretty much.
The women's qualifying day is so important.
Yeah.
Oh, so but on that practice day, it is qualifying on that?
No, they have a qualifying thing. Correct me if I'm wrong. Down a different trail, a different track.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, the day before or two days before, whatever it is.
So you got to kill yourself on the qualifying run so you don't die as much on the snow run.
Exactly.
On the race
exactly. Yeah.
Jeez.
For women's isn't as bad. I think the year I did it, we had 30 women, which is still a bit. But if you can get out in front, you're generally, no one's going to take you out. Whereas the men, there's 120 at least.
So they do actually limit it, though. It's at 120, I'm guessing. Okay, so
for the elite class.
There's amateurs down fucking thing. No way. Yeah. Shut up.
An e-bike. It's an e-bike category as well.
Up. So when you're down dead on the e-bike laying there, and then a 50 pounder just smacks you in the back of the head, is what you're saying.
So the e-bikers go before the woman, and they go like 15 minutes.
So you just watch carnage.
Death. The whole run. I am passing. I'm trying to snow, which I can't ride, and there's just bodies scattered everywhere and bikes everywhere. You're just trying not to hit these poor people it's a wild race. Don't let me put you off though. It's very memorable, and you'll look back with fond memories. Like,
not half show.
100%.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to run full face, back protector, and knee pads, and you have to run elbow pads as well.
Wow. Like, it's required.
Yep. It's required, yeah.
I get it.
A lot of races in France require at least knee pads, full face, and back protector. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. America's just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
You die, you die. Perfect.
So what are the races you want to do then?
Yeah.
What are on the map?
Well, I haven't looked too hard because I need to know just what the schedule is for the. I'd like to do Sciat again.
But like a fun race, is there like some fun stuff?
Sciat should not be on the fun list.
Yeah, I know.
The fun would be TDS Enduro.
Okay,
I've done it once.
Oh.
And it was insane. It was so much fun, and I'd love to do it again, but it didn't quite. Every year it didn't work with my schedule. So yeah, that would be an amazing one to return to. It'd be quite cool to do one of those like for trans races, like maybe Trans BC or something like that. Trans Madeira.
Yeah.
But yeah, I haven't looked too hard. I'm just
get the bucket list together and bring it to us later. And we'll post it. You know, your bucket list of these are the ones that Ray says.
Sounds good. But I'm open. Like if someone, like with the Dannyville, like if someone has a suggestion, I'll for sure be like, oh yeah, it was.
Spencer recommends Dannyville. Any other ones you recommend, Spencer?
I mean, I want to do some of these trans races as well. I'm going with you to Madeira or BC Bike Race, I guess, because yeah, those are on top of my list. Mega Avalanche is one of them also that I really want to do, but you've done it, so I don't know. Yeah, any of those, I feel like the cooler one-off races are just, they just tend to have an environment that is kind of unlike any other that make it more than just a bike race. The TDS is a perfect example. It's a bike race and there's awesome tracks, but it's so much more than that because of the people around, and going to races like that are so much more fun and enjoyable. And I guess this can kind of segue us into the next thing I would like to talk about, but races like the EDR don't have that much soul anymore, in my opinion. Ooh. And they're not that much fun to like go participate other than being in incredible places. And I would like to ask you what's your take on where Enduro is, maybe
hot topic
where,
right now.
Where EDR is
such a hot topic. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Boy. And does it have any life left in it? Cause I feel like it's struggling.
I think like at the event, it does. With the competitors, like it's still really tight racing, can still have a good time, there's still good trails, everyone's still hanging out before, during, after. It's definitely gotten more serious or more professional, But I think the problem is it's really hard to broadcast that. And, you know, the highlights package, I think it's really stepped up this year.
Sure.
But then it's still 3 days late. And by that time, it's, you know, it's kind of old news.
Yeah.
So it is tough. It's a tough one. It's definitely in a not a dark place at the moment, but it's not at its peak. And yeah, it'll be nice if, I don't know. Well, I guess with the whole Warner Brothers takeover, how they've got Downhill, XE, and Enduro, and is it their first year or second year? But it's early on.
I think it's their second year.
Second year, yeah. So all their resources and everything is going into the money-making sports, which will be especially XE,
yeah,
Downhill, and Enduro. I think it's losing in money at the moment.
For sure.
So it all is. Their, yeah.
It is.
All that, and it shows. It shows, like, the not putting as much resources or money into Enduro to try and broadcast it and try and make the package look,
it's like broadcasting six downhill races, you know.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And the cost of that would be insane. And it'll almost be, we're so remote at the moment and the stages are so long.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's a hard one.
And then on top of that, they put it on a Wednesday and you're like,
oh my God, don't get me started. Yeah. So,
but I'm not asking you to bite the hand that has fed you and stuff, but what can we do on a positive note? What do you think we as riders or industry professionals or whatever can do to kind of put a little more life and bring Enduro to a bit of a resurgence? Cause I mean, it's the most fun discipline to race.
So fun.
Just because bang for the buck, if you're a consumer, you're getting the most riding in, you're going to the coolest places, and it's something that is competitive but social at the same time, because you can go ride with your best friends or whatever. You ride and then race as fast as you can for up to 10, 20 minutes on a long stage, and then after that you can wait at the bottom and be like, yo, good run, how was that, and be social. So from a consumer's perspective, I think that we can keep this thing going. And there's a reason why it grew and got so popular, but what do you think we can do to add a little more fuel to the fire?
Yeah, it's definitely a hard one. I think having, you know, the local events, even in, you know, your country, you know, those are still going to be really big races and people, they're going to be high participation. You know, it's the original Enduros pretty much. So still supporting those events. Because I know even in New Zealand, some of the just events in general, there's less participation because,
yeah,
the cost is going up or people are just riding your bike. So yeah, I think starting at the grassroots level again and just supporting your local club in your country, travel to, I don't know, areas to do these races. And yeah, at the World Cup, I don't know, it obviously needs a bit more money. I think people like, you know, Jesse and Jack and Eddie are doing really well with their YouTube and vlogs, and that's always instant and fun, and you get a sense of what's going on there. I think since Josh Carlson's come on with the EDR, there's been a lot more coverage and positive coverage, and he's going a bit more in depth behind the scenes, what happened in the race, and finding those stories, which we used to have. And I think that's kind of cool, but I don't know. In the ideal scenario, I reckon it would be really cool if they just sold it off and then a new organizer bought it and brought it back to, you know, go to crazy venues like Madeira or South America and those remote places, yep, to showcase for local trails there. Cause I think that was, you know, at the moment it's going to be too costly and too hard to cover for Warner Brothers. Yeah. But have you, you know, that was kind of the original Enduro, big days and crazy places that no one has even heard of. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. Have you got any thoughts? I don't.
I mean, I got the solution. I got plenty of thoughts. But you're the guest, and we're asking you. So that's. I mean, we kind of push this question, I think, on everyone. Just see what.
Yeah, if XC or anything like that, like, hey, what can be done? Gravel, all this stuff, you know.
Yeah, because I think it's if we get in a positive environment with everything, there's always work that can be done for us and everyone, and especially as athletes and people in the industry, like. Yeah, we're in charge of this thing more than most people think or realize. So we gotta get together and figure out how we can grow one of the coolest sports in the world and get more people on bikes. Girls,
All of us here want Enduro to succeed, right?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
The roadmap to get to there, right? It's definitely a unique situation, right? With the broadcast situation, that's what makes it money, right?
The broadcast is the, because it is, it's impossible to broadcast it live. There's just too much to cover.
Well, it's a lot of money.
A lot of money.
Probably not. I mean, I've had to quote on it because that's kind of what I do, but it's an interest. It's tough, man. Like I love Enduro. You guys all love Enduro, right? I think the toughest part is how does it become a good money maker, but then also run the level of having it being a professional sport too, right? It's like all you guys have teams, you're spending money to get there. How do you guys get a return in it if it's not broadcasted, the proper type of stuff? But then how do you also put that on, make them tougher, harder? You guys want to go to these crazy places, but then it's like, where do you get your money if the pros are just getting the money back from payout? Then you got to get amateurs to also be able to ride that, so then the promoter makes money. So it's like it's a very tough avenue with enduro racing. There's no solution.
Definitely. There's no easy solution anyway, or straightforward. And I think whatever you do, I think that's the thing with bike industry, people love complaining as well. So
every industry.
You can't do the right decision no matter what you do.
Yeah.
It's not going to suit everyone. So
yeah, we get it.
I don't know. Yeah.
I think a huge opportunity.
Rave for president, you know? There we go. Rave for president.
I think a huge opportunity and one that is being pushed and taken advantage of a little bit is just more women and girls on bikes in general too. I mean, the progression that's happening, whether it be women getting a day or their own part of Rampage, the whip off from Crankworx is going on right now. The chicks were throwing down. It was
insane. Fair.
And the level of competition that more and more girls are doing and progressing into the sport, like with role models like yourself. I mean, it's so cool. And the more women that we get, the bigger that and more inclusive that the sport can be. So that's one that I really like. Trying to just talk about and see what we can do to
get because you've been in it for how many years of professional racing? 10?
Yeah, about 10.
So you've had to have seen it grown a lot, right?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I think it's in a really good place at the moment, like you said, with Crankworx or the Free Riders, Rampage, Downhill. Yeah, just all across the board. I think the barriers are becoming less and the doors are opening. And yeah, as soon as, you know, especially these young girls who have grown up with bikes get the opportunity, they're there and they're proving themselves. And they're, you know, even with the slope style and Crankworx, just opening up that door from the first Crankworx in Rotorua, where they're just kind of riding through the course, stoked that they got a backflip. So like now every Crankworx stop is... But just upping the game. So yeah. I think
they made it happen when the men didn't want to race too, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. show.
Yeah. Compete.
Yeah. So it's amazing. And it's so heartwarming to watch where it is at the moment, especially a lot of the Kiwi girls, you know, they're shredding. It's really cool.
No,
they
seriously are.
But yeah, like from when I started the sport, I don't know. Like when I first started, the girl who did bikini photos on Instagram got paid more been the World Cup leader, or like the women who were like winning consistently. And you're like, I don't know, that to me was really backwards, and it was a really hard sport to enter, especially as young, when everyone's telling you you need to dress in a bikini with your bike, and that's how you'll get sponsors and followers, and that's how you become a professional athlete. I'm like, what? Like, surely it should be about the racing and the sport. So kind of that backwards old school view that women's sport's only about looking good. I'm really happy that's far behind us now, and now it's actually, you know, the women's racing, it's exciting, it's tight. It's in a way better place than where it should have been when I started.
That's pretty cool. I feel like that, and maybe you could kind of say you're a little bit on the forefront of that, right? Like, you got this, you were there for the change, you obviously pushed women's racing better. You got to get some credit for that, right? Sticking in, you could have quit and became the bikini girl, right? At a certain point.
I know.
You didn't. You took the I'm going to keep racing and chugging along and stay in this sick ass 7-bedroom house in Sea Otter now, you know? That's kind of cool, right?
I think, it's one of those things, you stick at it, and there's enough fast women around me that, you know, and my sponsors, like, they've always been for racing. They've never been, in front of the, looking for influencers. So I was very lucky with the environment and to be given the opportunity to extend my racing in that industry at the time. I'm very, like, I would never go down that path because that's not me.
It was
a strange time, very strange time. Lots of strange advice from many people to go down that path.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
We know some names. It's okay. Spencer knows names. It's okay. Well, man, I feel like what have we missed on any subjects or not covered?
Oh, I got it.
Oh, you
I
got stuff? Hit it. Hit with some more stuff. Questions, yeah.
Always.
Okay, go.
I come loaded here.
He's prepared.
With his Starbucks, he's ready to go.
That's right. Caffeine's kicking in. Last time we saw you, you were here in the U.S. for Sea Otter, which was mid-April. You had just prior to that come from your home in New Zealand, where you live now. You're in Slovenia.
Yes.
What's it like not being home? Have you gone back to New Zealand once since then?
Not this year. This year I'll be 5 months away from home. And then I go back for 1 week. And then I think I might go to America for the XC Cups there and Canada. So yeah, this year's particularly long away from home.
Who watches the house? What I'm like, do
we
you have cats?
Flatmates.
Do you have dogs?
Yeah, we got a flatmate.
Okay.
Yeah. Flatmate and he takes care of everything. He's great. I struggle when people complain that we've been gone for like three weeks.
I'll never complain after this.
Yeah. Wow. I guess it's all the scale, you know, what you're used to. But yeah, I think coming from New Zealand, one, it's, you know, it's like 30, 35 hours on a good flight path to go home from here. So the travel alone's massive. The jet lag's terrible. And then it's winter at the moment in New Zealand. So if I go home, it's, you know, you can still train, but it's just a bit cold and a bit wet. And it's not so good. Whereas if I stay in Europe, I can train hard. There's races I can do to keep my, you know, race level high. I hate traveling as well. if I can limit that as much as possible, that's always good. But I think most of the Kiwis, pro mountain bikers and Australians, most of them will stay over for majority of the summer here. But yeah, actually last year was the first year ever I went home mid-season out of all my racing career. And we went home for, I think it was 6 weeks because there was such a big break in the middle. And that was weird. That was so weird to go back and then come over again. But
how does that work with the finance situation? I mean, like, it's almost like, why do you have a house there, right? And then yeah. If you're like, so you're paying rent on this place that you're not going to, and you're getting Airbnbs, I guess, or for, you know, for you're crashing at places, like how?
Yeah, well, it's not like we own the house and we have flatmates, so you know, we pay a little bit, but most of it's covered by the flatmates that are there. And then, yeah, when we're over here for a long time, we do long-term Airbnbs or stay with friends as much as we can to lower the costs. And it's, yeah, it's not, to be fair, like for flights home and back with all our luggage, like we travel with 2 to 3 bikes, then a big bag each, and then so we rack up like baggage fees for sure. So it's often more cost effective to stay here than to go home.
That makes sense.
What does it feel like getting home? Does it feel like home when you go back to it? Was it, you've been so far gone, it just kind of feels like, oh, here's a new place.
I treasure when I get home. I literally get home and I become a hermit for a couple of weeks. Like no one sees me.
Understandable.
I'm in my house. People are going weekends away or doing trips. And I'm like, nope, like, I am here. Yeah. takes about 2 weeks. And then I start venturing out again.
Wow.
So decompressing. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So then do you just have, it seems wild to me because like I'll drive somewhere and if I want, I'll just bring multiple bikes. For you, you're almost kind of limited at a certain point, right? Or do you leave some in America or I don't know, you know?
Yeah. Like this year I took the Intrigue X and my Enduro bike to America and raced the Yacht on Intrigue X. And then we shipped my Intrigue X home, which was my trail bike, and continued on our journey to Europe. And then we picked up my new race bike in Europe and the XC bike. Yeah.
So you have a bright future in logistics afterwards.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I could for sure be a travel agent. I know all the airlines that are good with bikes, all the good routes for, yeah.
Holy moly. Yeah. Write an article about this. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. Don't it's fly. Wild.
And then yeah, what's Jesse riding?
So he is on my spare bike. He's riding a medium live.
That's what I was trying to get at there.
Holy.
Yeah. So that's one of the things, I guess, when you're flying, he unfortunately can't travel with his own bike. So he's on my spare bike and it becomes his bike. Yeah. So wow. He's just on, like he's on probably 1 to 2 frame sizes too small for his height.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, he's a trooper. He's never complained about it. He just gets on.
Wow. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. How does that dynamic end up working out with you guys, you know, and him being your suspension tech, I guess would be the best way, and mechanic help? I mean, there's got to be some fights at a moment. No, that's not the air pressure, right? Or I don't know, you know, like.
I think very early on, it was quite challenging. Like it was mostly good, but we definitely butted heads and had some big challenges very, very early on. But I think, you know, when something doesn't go good, we take a moment, we talk about it, and we make plans for how to do it better in the future. So
he obviously has to know you the best, right? He's with you traveling, riding, knows the info and been, you know, for a long time. But it's an interesting dynamic that I see in, if you look at other professional sports, usually the relationship is, you know, I just take motocross, for example, and the chicks are just kind of like there to wash boots for the dudes, and it's horrible, right? I kind of feel like some of them are a little bit more, but like in mountain biking, it seems like if your significant other is right there with you, and they have to almost be at as good as you and riding a bike as well, right? And put in the time, and it's kind of wild when you see the power couples kind of like that. I'm always interested in how it kind of works out, right? You know?
Yeah. Like, I think as long as you both have respect for each other and know at the end of the day, you're both human.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a respect thing. Like I learned very early on, like I'd come in and I'd be struggling with my riding or on a course, and I'll come in and be overwhelmed and be like, my bike feels like shit. And then he's like, I've just spent 5 hours like rebuilding this bike. You're ungrateful. And he'll get offended. So I'll be like, I can't ride. How can I race? Like, what's going on? And he's like, you know, I've just spent all this energy on this bike and it's not appreciated.
You're racing this bike.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's, I mean, I came in when I was having issue with bike, and I'd be like, okay, I have to, instead of being like, this feels like shit, I'd be like, I have to be more
diplomatic.
Yeah, diplomatic. And
have, because you guys are going to dinner afterwards,
more,
you know?
Yeah. Just be like, I don't have enough support in my fork, or my fork is diving, or I'm losing traction on my front wheel when I'm cornering. And just be a bit more descriptive, so it's not an attack on him. It's like we're problem solving together.
No, and you just need to come in, ghost ride the bike. It sucks. I'm fucking done with this thing. I'm over it, you know.
Yeah, he did say if I ever threw my bike at him, we'll just walk out. Yeah, that's fair enough. No one should have bikes thrown at. Yeah, big. Yeah, that's not cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he's obviously learning to be a bit more sensitive during race time, when there's obviously a lot of things
Spencer
going
needs
on.
To be, yeah, I got to be sensitive to Spencer too. Like when I'm around him on race time, he just is a different person, you know. Like you guys are all just you athletes, you know.
Athletes are crazy for sure. The more I'm in the circuit, like there's the person, and then there's an athlete, and it's almost like two completely different people. It's it's crazy. We've seen some things for sure.
Yeah, seriously.
Many athletes just losing the plot.
Yeah, it makes it great for being, you know, I love the story.
For sure. Yeah, it's a high stress environment. And then I guess when you have so much pressure from sponsors and then on yourself and it's not going your way.
So if I see you guys on the flight and you're not sitting together, I could see that the fork didn't have the right air pressure is what I'm hearing, right?
Like, exactly.
He didn't want to change it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because you, Ray, you're pretty in tune with your bike, obviously. And Jesse's the expert mechanic suspension guru, so he's going to set you up on what feels right. And maybe it doesn't feel right for you. So I could see where you guys could butt heads a little bit, and shoot, I would. I'm way too hard headed. I'd be like, nah, this is right.
From you, the one who doesn't even change clickers or air or anything, you just fucking ride the bike. Come on. I'd be
screwed. I think it's a thing with suspension as well. Like, you know, there's no gold standard. Like, if you're this weight, you need this pressure and this many clicks here, this much compression. It's, you know, there's like a range that you want to be in, and it's kind of correct, but it's quite a wide range, and it's so individual to your riding style, your weight, your bike setup. So yeah, I think as long as you're in that range, then it's down to personal preference. So yeah. I think the suspension stuff's probably the easiest bit, because it's feedback from me that will change. And normally it's just like one or two clicks here and there. It's nothing dramatic, but
So for people that probably don't know, and I don't fully know, he does DVO support in New Zealand, I'm correct? And
he's DVO New Zealand.
Distributor and service
the guru for suspension in New Zealand
for sure. Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
And more than that. He's a lot for DVO, a lot to DVO.
Okay. Okay. So he knows suspension, and it's probably tough at some moments where it's like, no, it doesn't work. And you're like, but it does.
Well, the good thing for me is obviously, yeah, Mr. DVO in New Zealand, and he has to deal with all the customers. So there's, you know, most of the customers absolutely wonderful, but you'll get the odd one that thinks they know everything, and they won't have a conversation. They'll tell Jesse what is wrong. So I am. And you're sitting there like, to that. Yeah, so I am amazing compared to that.
You're a great customer.
Exactly. Yeah, you're
I'm
a great
easy customer.
Customer.
Yeah, yeah, you just gotta find someone who's a lot worse than you. So you have the comparison, and you're like, okay, I'm great.
Wow.
That's
I'm easy. Yeah.
Let me write that down. Real quick.
Yeah, you should, Spencer. Yeah. Actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
or
I know
get
it's.
It, yeah.
I know.
Get it in.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go.
I'll get an inside job, like I'll message a friend back at home, and then they'll abuse Jesse. Like, well, so special, yeah. And I'm like, see, I'm great.
Wow.
Wow.
All right.
Wow. Okay. That is a hot tip right there for anyone who's looking to race EDR next year and you have a suspension sponsor.
Oh, I was just thinking this is Ray's guide to relationships in general.
Yeah, yeah, seriously. Make the other one like, hey,
I'm doing this as my next girlfriend.
Yeah. 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 Wow. Yeah, good point right there. Yeah.
Yep. But nice. No, really, like, we've done so much bike testing and suspension testing that he has a really good idea of what I really like on my bike. So he has, yeah, he's able to set up very, very close to, or if not at the point where I'm happy. So yeah,
that's cool.
I think that's years and years of working together and working on bikes together, and then he rides my bikes as well. So he has the
This is shit. Change it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's awesome.
That's cool.
So what's next now? You're in Slovenia for how long? How much longer? A month?
I don't actually know. So I had I have an elbow injury at the moment. Okay. So I can't ride a lot. And I'm seeing a doctor on Monday. So just depending on how that goes, if it's like you're free to go, then we might start making our way through the French bike parks and getting some more bike time before the next race, which is start of September. But if it doesn't go well, we might hang around a little bit longer. Just I've got my in-house physio here, so she can help me.
Is this the injury that I heard about that, like, you had a cut and then you ended up having a surgery somewhere? Okay, tell us more.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Oh my god. So in Leger, I had a crash and just slid over, toppled down, grazed my like knee and put a tiny little hole in my elbow. Like, it was a really deep hole, but it was tiny. And straight away, went to the medical center, got stitches. They cleaned it up. They're like, sweet, you're on your way. It was fine. There was a lot of swelling, but it was fine. And I got it checked and cleaned every day. And then, so I did on Saturday. And then on Monday, I had the race in Switzerland for the EDR. So we drove Monday, France to Switzerland, checked in at our Airbnb. And then at dinner time, I noticed that the wound, not my wounds, but my forearm was getting hot, and there's a bit of redness around there. So I messaged my friend, the physio who I'm staying with, and gave her a photo. And I was like, what do you think? It's like, you know, it's 7:30 at night. It looks like it's getting a bit infected, but can I just wait till morning? Because no doctors are open and I'm really embarrassed. I don't want to go to the hospital just to get antibiotics. Like, but she rang me and she was like, no, you should go. Infections, you know, antibiotics sooner rather than later. So like, damn it. So, okay. Me and Jesse drove to a hospital, which was like half an hour, 40 minutes away. Got there at about 9 PM at night, and luckily, we're in Switzerland. They're pretty efficient there. Got seen straight away and did all the blood tests, x-rays. They reopened up the wound and checked it. And I had ruptured a bursa in my elbow, which is a sac full of fluid that goes between the bone and like a tendon, and it reduces friction in that with movement in the elbow. So that had ruptured, and that's why it was so swollen. But the fluid that's in the bursa, it's like a really good spreading ground for bacteria and infections. Like, it spreads like wildfire. So unfortunately, I'd got an infection inside that, inside the fluid. And we went into the hospital. Like, Jesse double parked outside because I was like, I'll just be in, grab the antibiotics, be out. And it kept on escalating. And it's like, okay, they have to open it up. Okay, sweet. And then the surgeon opened it up and he's like, yeah, like, we need surgery. Like, as soon as possible. Like, oh my, like, what?
Wow.
So they pretty much wait, yeah, all from a tiny little cut. They waited for the anesthetic. You have to wait 6 hours from your last meal. So I had to wait till midnight at the soonest time we could.
Oh, this
operate.
Was like an emergency surgery.
It was an
like,
emergency.
Hey, we're scheduling
yeah.
it tomorrow.
No, they're like, we need to operate as soon as it's time after you've eaten. So you're like around midnight on the dot, they came in. I got wheeled into surgery, had surgery. Where? And then straight, I was just like, oh my God, like this is crazy. Like, came in for antibiotics and now, you know, emergency surgery. And
cutting my arm.
Yeah. Oh, and they're gosh. Like, oh, you have to stay the night.
No.
Like, oh my God, this is crazy. And then, so had surgery, they cleaned it all out. They cut away all infected tissue. They either took out or repaired the bursa, I'm not too sure. But then they put a drain in my elbow so it could still leak out. yeah. And so we stayed overnight, and in the morning they're like, oh no, you have to stay for another 2 days.
Holy
and yeah, it was crazy.
Did they say like if you would have came in the next morning, what would have happened? Like,
oh, hold on, your sound's suddenly gone.
Oh, sorry. No, like if you were to come in the next morning, did they like tell you like, oh, if you would have been another day, would they were like, well, we're gonna have to cut your arm off? Or like, what level was this
so,
at?
So luckily for me, so pretty much when I first noticed it, it was just on my forearm. By the time I went into surgery, which was, well, 3 hours after I went to hospital, it had already spread up halfway up my arm. So it was like really fast moving. And when people found out, that's when I like heard horror stories. Because I think, yeah, with the bursa and the fluid, it's not good, and it's quite, you have to move quite fast. One guy I heard like scratched it from skateboarding accident and lost his arm. And one of the other guys who works at SRAM on the circuit, he might have crashed on his mountain bike, I'm not sure, but he waited. So he kind of had the same situation as me, but he waited till the next day. So probably only 12 or 24 hours after. And he was in hospital 5 days, and they talked about amputation. They're like, if this doesn't work, we have to cut your arm, like take your arm away. Otherwise it's going to travel through your body. Yeah. And one was from an insect bite, and he lost his arm. So I was like, oh man, like luckily I didn't know at the time but yeah, I think if I had waited to the morning, it would be a very different story, and I'd be fighting right. to keep my arm.
What?
Crazy. Yeah, what? It was, it felt unreal. Yeah.
How's your arm doing?
Yeah. What does it look like it's right doing, now?
Yeah, it's good. It's normal size. Okay. They had to, so I had a drain in for 2 days, and they removed the drain, but they left. So I had a surgical hole, and in the original hole, they made it bigger so it could push all the gross stuff out, and they left it open so they didn't stitch it up. So just through the next week, it could still continue to push out. So I've still got like the cut, but it's, yeah, it's looking like it's back to the normal size now, and I can start to put a little bit of weight through. And I've been riding my bike on the road and kind of gravel tracks. So, yeah, it's getting a lot better.
It's no longer wow. halfway green. You know,
yeah, like, yeah. No, we're good. It was, yeah.
It was a moment.
It was a moment, yeah. And I was at first, like, when I went in the hospital and then I realized I needed surgery, like, I was like, oh, man, because I was doing all right in the overall for World Cup and I was racing was in a few days, so I was super disappointed. And then in the morning when I found out, like, how bad it could have been, I was like, oh, okay, it's in perspective. Yeah.
You're like, this is I'm why more I glad never I got my arm. Again. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So infections, if in doubt, straight away, don't be ashamed and embarrassed to go to the hospital like I was. Just go. Yeah.
My gosh. Wow.
Wild.
Okay. So you have your arm.
I have my arm. It's a functioning arm at work. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I feel like I just like don't really take care of that shit. Damn.
Man. Yeah. Even like I've had so many stitches in my life, so many grazes, cuts. I was like, this, yeah, I've never had any issues with gnarly infections or anything like this. So, yeah, it was, I mean, yeah, I'll be a lot smarter for future now.
Wow. Well,
yeah,
glad you're all good.
Yeah, wow. Me too.
Yeah, me too.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I don't know how I'm gonna ride now. Cool. Yeah, I'm gonna rethink some shit for sure. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild. Okay. So did he move from the double park spot or?
Yeah. So he did. Yeah. I think he waited maybe 20 minutes, and then when they're like, it wasn't just a go in for antibiotics, but like, oh no, we need to open up the stitches and just have a quick look. Then Benny came in and he was like, okay,
he's waiting in the car, expecting to come out and you're in surgery.
3 hours later. Hey, yeah. I left someone here a minute ago. I'm a little bit confused.
Yeah, it was so crazy because when I first went on, I felt so stupid because it was so little, like for redness and swelling, it just looked so little. And then when they're like, oh, we need to do emergency surgery, me and Jesse kind of looked at each other like, are we being scammed?
You're like, I walked in here fine. I'm confused.
Yeah.
You got the wrong paperwork? Or
I feel fine. Like,
yeah.
Is this a money-making thing? But no.
Literally.
And then you wake up missing a liver or something? Or
you're like, what? I just found a scar on my abdomen. Yeah. I'm like, oh. No.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, Switzerland hospitals though, oof, so good. Like everyone there was super friendly. The food was amazing. Not quite personal chef amazing, but still pretty good.
He's listening. He's going to be really pissed that you said that, you know, for a second.
The dog. Wow. The Swiss.
Okay. Swiss so right dog. Now it's just getting that elbow back.
Back. And then,
yeah. And then back and, riding.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It'd be good. Good to do. I've definitely like I've been riding quite a bit, obviously road riding. I've put my bars right up, so I've got like no weight going through my arm. But yeah, it'll be good to get on some more dirt trails and single track. I've missed it.
Superized bars, big
superized bars. Yep.
All right, I can't wait to see you riding Dak Norton's setup now.
Maybe that's why he's riding that setup, you know. Maybe he had this infection close call, you know. Holy maybe. Shit! Wow, I'm sorry. I'm just a little like nervous just to fall now, you know. Like wow, because seriously, like there's multiple times where you know you have the cut, and just like you're saying, you're like it's gonna be fine. Like you're just being a crybaby, you know. And
oh, totally. Especially mountain bikers, I feel we're always hurt. And we always push through all our injuries and the pain. So, yeah, it was, I'm glad I sought help from my physio and took that decision out of my hands because I would have definitely waited. Yeah. So,
That's why you're staying there too, huh? She's really keeping it
lifestyle. She's incredible.
Amazing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow. Okay. Spencer, you got any other good hard hitting ones?
That's good. I don't know. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to plug there, Ray?
Yeah.
Nah, not really. I'm just, it's hard. I guess it's hard to follow.
Yeah.
Well,
but yeah, just
wild. Okay. Well, thanks for freaking giving us this story. I'm a little bit blown away by this. Because, like, I seriously had some cuts, and I'm like, man, sometimes they get bad. And then I'm thinking about my kids, like, when they get cuts on their stuff, and they're like, Daddy, it hurts. And I'm like, nah, you're fine. Now I'm like, no, you're not fine. We're going.
Honestly, as soon as it gets, like, if the redness is increasing, and if it gets, like, hot to touch, that's when you're like, okay, I need to move.
And I heard like, but if it kind of smells like rotten cheese or something too, or something, or no.
Well, mine, maybe if it's really bad, but it's probably when you're about to lose something.
You've gone too far at that moment.
You've gone way too far. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, I've had hundreds and hundreds of grazes, cuts, many stitches. And it was obviously, just unlucky.
A once in a lifetime experience, you're hoping.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Cool. Well, I appreciate you coming on and digging into some of these subjects and talking, keeping your arm. And surviving ice racing and being the queen of sea otter. And and shout out to Jesse for setting this whole thing up. Like, you're a hard person to get on this podcast, so clearly he's your agent, so sold you well on this one. And I tell him I owe him a beer, or I don't know if he drinks
he definitely drinks beer.
Okay perfect.
I feel that's a requirement of being a mechanic. You have to be a beer.
I see a healthy relationship between me and him coming on here. So thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. Hopefully we'll see you soon. Like, I don't, maybe at Sea Otter again or before that, or I don't know.
Would. I've still, I'd like to, and I'd like a few more first places at Sea Otter. I'll come in a little bit more prepared, know more what I'm in for. So that'd be really cool.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
Yeah, thank you, Ray. Yeah, appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, Ray. Cool.
We'll be cheering you on in the latter parts of the year. I'm sure y'all will be good. And got
we'll see you at Mega Avalanche maybe. That's next year.
We got a year.
To prepare. Yeah.
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 Cool. Thank you so much.
Cool. Thank
see
you.
Ya.
See you, Ray.
Bye.
I forgot. I wanted to kind of just mention real quickly to just talk to her about it, but it's all good. They didn't end up running the glacier at Mega Avalanche this year because of wind conditions.
Yeah, because that's exactly what you need—a little extra wind while you're on the ice.
So they started it just below.
Oh, really? Yeah. Didn't Luca just went over and did that, right? Exactly. I guess we'll see.
A lot of people that I know. Amy Morrison was there. I'm bummed.
That would have been wild if you would have went.
Yeah.
Next year. So then you'll just look like you're just picking up the breadcrumbs, bud.
Exactly. that's what it is. That's what we do best down here.
Wow. Yeah.
Anyways, that was a nice little hour and a half with
Nicole. Yeah. Renee. I'm stoked. Like, we were trying to get her on at Sea Otter, right? And then obviously, I mean, you're scheduled, you're racing everything, so I get it. It would have been cool, but I'm glad that we got her on, and
for sure.
Got to dig into some stuff. And I mean, that's a pretty lengthy career. I mean, enduro's not, it's pretty gnarly, right?
It for the whole time, which is sweet. And then it's cool to see her have a bit of a resurgence and have some really good results again. And
and keep her arm,
and keep the arm.
Keep the arm.
Yeah, super stoked.
Really vital if you want to race mountain bikes. Keep the arm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, you got anything else? What do we want? Anything else we need to dig into?
I don't know. Crankworks is going on right now.
I fucking know. I kind of having that FOMO right now,
I 100% am, but it's weird that it's in July, a couple weeks earlier than it typically is. So
I know. I mean, now you can do it and Loretta's if you really want to kill yourself.
Literally. I'm not. You can. I'm
not. No, I have no plans of that unless,
Yeah.
Crazy shit happens. But no, I'm having a little FOMO, missing out on that. But I guess, we got other shit coming up.
Yep.
Other cool things.
Yep, exactly. And then old Keegan said he did the opposite of what I was doing. He basically took my entry. He said, I said I was doing Downeyville. I didn't end up doing Downeyville. He said he didn't. He wasn't going to do it. And he ended up smoking everyone. So that was cool to see him and Tobin crush that.
Those boys said they want to come back on after Big Sugar type thing. So maybe we do a little ask on that, right? You know?
100%.
Yeah, like what the fuck, dude?
See what else is going on.
You told us you weren't doing it, and then you did it.
Hey, good. That's good.
That's good. We got Olympics are pretty fucking close here. We're days.
Start today, I think.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Snoop Dogg running around just lighting blunts. So.
I think the opening ceremony is today, Friday, July 26th. Or maybe it's probably happening right now.
Yeah, but pretty close to them boys racing here soon.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. We got some Olympics stuff.
Team USA, don't let me down.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, I know. That'd be good. There's some other stuff going on that seems cool too, you know? I don't know where I was going with that. Yeah, that was horrible. I had some other shit on my head up there.
Yeah,
and stuff that I can't talk about yet, but hopefully I have some news to talk about someday in my life. Gotcha. Maybe. I don't know. Let's wrap this one.
All right, great.
Yeah, let's wrap it. Yeah.
Sounds good.
I need to get my fucking coffee in that I don't drink. But.
All right.
Thank you all for listening. Check us out, social media, Instagram, InsiderMTB. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, and I believe Google Podcasts, but I'm not quite sure because I got an email saying some shit that it's changing. And if all fails, you get us on YouTube, watch this video if you really want to see our boring ass mugs, and then you want to see that dragon that was behind, and then the Coca-Cola sponsorship that hopefully is coming to Spencer because it's in every single shot. So YouTube, Apple, Spotify, you can find us for sure. Maybe Google, don't know. But all else fails, InsiderMTV.com has the podcast. It's a lame website, but you can listen to the shit. So thank you all for checking out. And deuces, I guess, at this point.
Right on. Thanks for listening.